Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. That's right. Ever since the coronavirus, I have figured out how to have some music added to the podcast.
This takes it to a different level.
It does. The problem is sometimes I don't want to let it go. I just want to keep it going. And I feel like the listeners are going to be the same way. They're like, that was a good song. Anyways, welcome back, everybody. Super excited for our guest tonight. Dr. Zach, you're in Indy, right?
Yep, Indianapolis.
Dr. Zach Almond, did I say that right?
It's Almond.
Almond, like the nut.
So it's pronounced like the nut, but it's spelled like the Almond Brothers with a D on the end. So I always, like in third grade, it was all man with a D. That's how I'd introduce myself. So,
well, perfect. Well, Dr. Zach, I'm super glad to have you. We got you here for a couple of reasons. One, you know, you're a dentist, rock and rolling, and I'm interested to see how things are going, you know, post coronavirus, what y'all are doing, you know, to get back in the swing of everything. I think everybody's kind of interested to hear those experiences. And then two, what I really want to spend a lot of time on is you've kind of created your own side hustle, a little extra company that's doing really well and helping a lot of dentists. So tell us a little bit about that.
I have. So yeah, what do you want to hear about first?
Well, why don't you tease that a little bit, and then sure, we'll go back to just life as what's life right now.
Okay, sure. Sounds good. So, I bought my practice in 2013, and the two things that I wanted to focus on was, profitability. And
That makes you a millennial, like straight up then, right?
No.
How old are you? Did you go late to dental school?
I'm 41.
You're definitely not a millennial then. You were late to dental school then?
No.
You didn't buy a practice till late?
Correct. I did the military. I was Air Force.
Okay, you did Air Force. You left that part out.
Well, I didn't know that was a part
2013.
Of the story.
I would say it's applicable. Okay, so, when did you graduate dental school?
So I really started with humble beginnings.
You old geezer, 41.
So I started dental school 2001.
Okay.
9/11 happened during my first year of dental school.
That's crazy.
And I signed up for the Air Force. I literally walked into the recruiter's office.
That's kind of
three
cool.
weeks later. And they said, yeah, that's great, but you're already in dental school. So why don't you stay there and we'll pay for dental school? And so I did the HPSP scholarship.
Nice.
I did a 1-year AEGD residency over Wright-Patt, Dayton, Ohio. And then...
So five years after you did dental school and then had 5 years of service, basically?
Turned out to be almost six. It was supposed to be four, but I was deployed to Afghanistan for 6 months, about 5 months.
Have we never talked about this? Or have we?
No.
I think we ever had.
No.
When were you in Afghanistan?
When was I or where was I?
When? Geography in Afghanistan is not very good.
So 2008. So kind of after the majority of the real insurgency stuff, I was actually at Manas Air Base in Kyrgyzstan, which is the refueling wing for Bagram Air Force Base.
Okay.
And my job was to we transitioned from a tent hospital to a hardened facility. So my main duties were as a dental officer was to outfit the dental clinic, kind of get it up to speed. And then we also did a lot of community outreach, going to orphanages and things, just kind of goodwill in the communities. So
nice.
Yeah.
So then you did 6 years then. And then in that, from there to 13, what happened? Or was that bonding up against each other?
Two failed associateships. Actually, the first associateship was not a failed one. My wife and I decided to move back to Indiana. She's a dentist as well. So she was working for a guy, great, awesome dentist. Actually, two partners down in Charleston. They own two practices. And we reopened one of their old locations when I got out of the Air Force. And then we got, she got pregnant with our second kid. And she said, you know, I really think we should move back to Indiana. I said, you know what a great idea would be? Let's move back to Indiana. So
that's hysterical.
And then one more associateship up there. And that one didn't work out so well. And then
what does that mean? Didn't work out so well.
So in my particular circumstance,
I'm also like cherry picking because like we're about to hire an associate. So I'm like curious, like what works and what doesn't work in these things.
So transparency works. The guy I worked with was not transparent, promised one thing, turned out to be another thing. And honestly, it was my mental state at the time too.
Yeah. You were probably ready to own on some level at that point, be on your by yourself. Right.
And I thought I knew everything.
Oh, definitely.
And, you know, and you come out of there just like every dentist does. They think, man, I am the best dentist. I'm God's gift to dentistry.
Sure.
You know, 8 years later, I realized I wasn't. Yeah. But
it's funny how that works.
It is. And, you know, like coming in, like bringing in an associate, I think the associate has an idea of how they think the business should work without actually knowing anything about the business side of things. And so you have two very different levels of understanding. And the only way an associateship works is if you as the owner can educate them as to the whys and the hows. So that way they understand, oh, money just doesn't grow on trees.
I mean, I think there's mutual conversations too, because I'm a big advocate of like in a couple of short years, I've brought a lot of value, I think, to the practice. The flip side is I was not naive enough to think that I was also smart, I guess, on some level, being open enough to realize too that like, hey, this guy has got 30 years of experience. Like, you're stupid to think that like you can't lean on a lot of, you know, like there's a mutual, you know, because on some level, I think that a lot of practices need a little bit of like new ideas, new change.
For sure. So the practice I went into, I walked in, they were doing 600K. In 18 months, we took it to 1.8 million.
Wow.
And then the proposal I was given for buy-in was at the value of 1.8 million. Yeah.
Well, and
not what I brought to the practice.
But this is a good lesson, right? This is like life lesson number one, because
for sure.
what probably didn't happen was there was probably nothing that outlined that from the beginning, was there?
Handshake agreement. And that's totally my fault.
But it's yes, no, maybe. I mean, like I did the same thing. It was my dad, you know, I mean, I came in, we were at 1.5, you know, next thing you're 1.4, next thing, you know, 18 months later, I'm trying to buy in the practice and we're like 2-3. It was kind of the same thing. It's like, well, you know, what do you do here? And so I think that's a good side point to note is that, you know, a lot of people right now are looking to buy practices or trying to get away from their associateships. It's just weird times as it is. And I think it's important to really think about that as the more you can outline things from the get-go, I think the better that is. All right. So continuing on. So you opened your doors. Did you and your wife work together or?
No. Honestly, so my wife is an amazing dentist and she did a couple startup. Well, she did a startup for Heartland where we lived before we bought the practice. And then she actually walked away for my practice opportunity. So,
good for her.
Man, it was, yeah, I just can't speak highly enough of her and what she's done for the family, but she really kind of, just took a step back clinically while we were raising the kids because she wanted that opportunity to kind of be the mom, you know, and actually be part of the kids' lives. But
dude, to be clear, I have an 18-month-old now. It is 10 times harder to be a parent than it is to be an owner of a practice. I mean, gosh, I don't know.
I couldn't trade with her.
Oh, there's not. I wouldn't last a week.
Right. Then her mom went through some health issues, ended up with passing away from cancer. But it was just really kind of a blessing the way that she was able to step away and kind of walk with her mom through that journey. But I think she's ready to get back into kind of clinical dentistry. And she is. She's actually now the clinic director for a local for an outreach clinic. So she's kind of doing all the treatment planning and teaching dental students. So she's got a good gig, but I think she wants to kind of get back into something a little bit more.
Yeah. So you're doing your practice thing, and then you think, this isn't enough. I want to start a company. A second company has nothing to do with actual clinical dentistry.
Yeah. So I've been described as a serial entrepreneur. The practice was going well. So when we bought the practice, it was a two doc practice, two retiring docs. They were doing about 1.4 with about 77% overhead. And so kind of my focus immediately became, how do we drive down that overhead? And then my partner and I kind of looked at, how can we improve our processes to increase our treatment plan acceptance, case acceptance, things like that, because we brought in a lot to the practice that they weren't offering. My partner places implants. I do sleep apnea, Invisalign. I do endo. So we're bringing in a little bit more high dollar items that we needed to get a little bit creative with. How are we going to present these to the patients in a way that's palatable to them and get them to accept treatment? And so that's kind of where Apex came from. One, in my process of looking at driving down the overhead, I realized, is this a PG-13 podcast?
We have explicit. We're explicit rating. So yeah, unfortunately, we've been told by iTunes that we are not PG. So feel free to go after it.
Well, just how like shady AF merchant services companies are. I mean, and that goes for the large banks to mom and pops to, these dental specific processors. It was just, it really left a bad taste in my mouth. And I was like, I knew I could do it better. I knew what I wanted to be able to do with my payments in the office, with like payment plans, website payments, things like that. I was like, why is there not a company out here that can do this, do it affordably, do it transparently, and not make me feel dirty at the end of the day? And so I was very fortunate in the fact that I had a friend who already owned a merchant services company down in the low country in Charleston, which is where I was stationed. So we're really good friends. And I just reached out to him. And I'm like, hey, I think there's an opportunity here to do this better, to provide a better service to my colleagues and to have a little fun with him. I mean, honestly, like, he was my best friend down in Charleston. And when I moved back up to Indiana, we maybe talked once a month. And so we kind of looked at it like, hey, this is a way for us to kind of reconnect as buddies and just create something. And it's literally just blown up in a great way, like in a really fun way, but almost in an unexpected, stressful way too, because, so it's been crazy. It's been crazy, but it's been crazy good. It's been crazy good. And it's a lot of fun. I get to meet a lot of awesome people, a lot of opportunities that I wouldn't have had without creating that company. So it's just, a really fun ride. So
let's step back a little bit. So you obviously, you're kind of looking at this trend I've overhead, and you notice, hey, I'm paying crazy amount of fees for merchant services. The challenge for us as dentists is, like, I don't even know where to start with this, right? Like, I mean, when we first talked, I knew that I probably wasn't getting the best fees. I did my practice loan with Bank of America. So, one of the things that I think everybody realizes or should realize is that when you do, loans with these companies, a lot of times one of the things they'll do is, part of their whole goal is to kind of swallow up a lot of the practice to get other areas of the practice to pay them more money too. So it's not like they're just getting the interest from the loan, but hey, we're going to do your merchants, we'll do your checking accounts, the whole nine yards, right? So we kind of got swallowed up in that. And like I guess a lot of companies, there's it seems to be like there's startup fees that are like, we're going to give you 6 months of this, or like, they're really good deals. Is that a kind of theme?
So for a lot of companies, because it is so convoluted and hard to understand, they will start you off at a low rate and then gradually bump you up.
And I want to like be like super basic, because mainly I'm the stupid guy in the room here, and I'm sure there are people other listening to this. They're like, okay, let's just start from the bottom up. So merchant services, we're talking credit card fee swiping, correct? And I'm arguing what are the statistics say, Zach, that 80% of payments in office are through credit cards? I mean, like, what's the...
No. It's more like 50-55%, depending on your practice makeup. If you're fee for service, yeah, you're looking at 75-80%.
But excluding insurance.
Oh, excluding insurance. You're looking, ugh, 95%.
Okay, that's what I thought, right? Like, because people are, what are they doing? Cash or debit card, right? And debit card, you still use this too? Like a merchant swiper?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I told you these are stupid questions. Okay, so.
No. These are great questions.
So you whenever we do these transactions, we're giving up a percentage of the money. So like if I swipe for $100, they owe $100 and they give me their Chase cash back card or whatever it is. What does that look like for most companies? How does the charging work there?
Sure. So $100 is a good example because it's easy to break down, right? So out of every $100 that you process, approximately $1.85 goes to the actual credit card company or the funding bank. Okay. So Citibank or MasterCard or Visa, Discover. Okay. There are different rates.
So every time I swipe my credit card, that credit card company is getting paid?
Oh, for sure. How do you think they make money?
If I don't pay my credit card bills?
See, that's why they're some of the largest publicly held companies in the world.
Well, it makes sense because now, you know, I get so many points and crap. I don't know where my debit card is. They're like, I only pay things with credit cards.
So, and that's kind of the goal of credit card companies. So, and I want to be very clear about this. I'm not a fan of credit cards. Not a fan of credit cards at all.
I'm a super big fan, but we can debate that later. Okay, keep going. But I don't see your side. Okay. So
there's multiple sides, but it's like credit card companies have become so, they have ingrained themselves into our society. Like they are now a necessity. Nobody even thinks about paying in cash.
In fact, if you try to get a hotel room or like try to go like on a flight, you can't, right? You have to have a credit card. It's crazy.
So off the top, whatever company you're making that purchase through is taking about a 2% hit on their fees.
Okay, then what happens?
So then not only on top of that do the card companies get paid, but then there has to be a funding bank or a merchant services provider that actually facilitates and insures the transaction, which is where we come in. We're kind of the go-between the credit card company and you, the dentist. Because we're providing the security of that transaction. We're actually providing your funds next day. Gotcha. Right? So we're kind of like the insurance policy between you and the card company, which is why we're in existence, because the card companies don't actually interact directly with you, Sully Sullivan of Sullivan Dental Partners.
Right, right.
So different companies price it differently because it is so convoluted and hard to understand, because the card companies layer in these fees that are completely unavoidable. We call them pass-through or interchange fees. That nobody, no matter who you process with, whether it's us, Bank of America, or Square, you can't get rid of those base fees. Like I said, about 1.85%.
And how much do those fluctuate between banks and what? Like, are there certain ones you're like, oh, this sucks. Like, they're charging me a ton or some are less. Give me an example.
American Express charges the most, for sure.
Okay, so that's why a lot of places don't take American Express then.
The other reason is a lot of companies don't lump American Express payments into the next day funding for like Visa, MasterCard, Discover. You don't get paid on your American Express for 2 to 3 days because they haven't negotiated that with American Express. So it's just more complicated, harder to reconcile your end of days, harder to do your accounting. So gotcha. A lot of people are just like, nope, forget it, not taking American Express. In reality, as a dentist, American Express is the target audience that you want to go for. You want those people that have the disposable income or the buying capital to do your all on fours, your full mouth rehab. So I looked at this the other day. 82% of my cases over $5,000 were paid for in American Express.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah.
So that's like, oh my goodness. If you're not taking American Express, how many of these cases are you letting walk out your door? Yeah, it's a little bit higher cost of doing business. But you got to look at the risk and reward. So let's just say American Express is about, let's just call it 0.5% more expensive than a MasterCard or Visa. Well, if it's 0.5% more expensive, but you're doing 20% more volume.
Yeah, I'm in.
It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer.
Now, when people sign up, like, do I get the, because I don't even know. Do we get like the say and ones we're going to accept, not accept, or how does that work? Or that's
you don't.
Okay.
You don't. Unless you just say, I don't want to accept American Express.
Yeah. Unless I just tell them we don't take that.
But you got to think about it. So like you get these, like Citibank rewards cards. Like rewards cards are not giving you, the consumer, rewards out of the goodness of their heart.
Correct.
They are increasing their rates to the merchant on the back end to make up for those rewards. So you pay, you, the merchant of Sullivan Dental Partners, pay a higher interchange rate or pass-through rate for those rewards cards than you do a basic card, which is why debit cards are so inexpensive. And there's a lot of layers to it, but debit cards are the least expensive card to process.
There's no kickback. That makes sense.
There's no kickback, but also it's a higher security transaction because they have to know the PIN number. So there's a higher likelihood that it's actually that person. So instead of a 1.8% pass-through rate, it's 0.2%. It's like the cheapest type of transaction you can take. So you always want to take PIN debit in your office if it's available because you're saving more money.
Okay, so so you have those fees, and then let's talk about typically for a merchant, what is the typical merchant then fee for that middle part of the transaction?
There's no typical. It's all
across the board.
It's the Wild West out there. So honest to God, is.
So give me a range. I mean, what do people, how do you audit it? You have my Bank of America stuff still?
I do. I've got it right in front of me.
Perfect. Yep. I wanted you to pull this up. So tell me, what was I paying?
So you were, at least Bank of America had you on an interchange plus system, which means they were just passing through the interchange rate and then they would give you a set markup, right?
Meaning it's a fixed markup? Is that what I'm going to
say? A fixed percentage.
Okay. Yes. A fixed percentage. Okay. And how common is that versus not common?
Not common at all.
Okay.
That's the pricing structure we use because it's the most straightforward and honest. But in dentistry, by far and away, the most common is called a tiered system because Interchange Plus was not available to small companies like a dental office until about 5 years ago. So let's look at you in specifically. Bank of America was charging you 0.51% on top of the interchange rate.
So 1.85 or whatever.
So 0.5. So let's just say 2.3. Okay. Our standard rate is 0.15% on top of interchange rate. So the difference is 0.36%. Not a whole lot, right? But hold on. But looking at your volume, we're saving you $450 one month, $560 the next month.
Yeah.
So that adds up.
Straight cash.
Straight cash.
That's overhead out of my pocket.
That's right. I'll tell people that all the time because they're like, oh, you're only saving me like $150 a month. And I'm like, okay, but if I told you that I was just going to switch off your current processor and turn our processing on, and at the end of the year, I was going to pay for your office Christmas party and your office bonuses, would you say yes?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, we would. Why wouldn't you? It's a no-brainer. Because nothing changes. And in fact, with Apex, because of the platform we built, we're not only saving money, we're increasing your processing power and the opportunities you have to collect money. And that goes to the second part. Like, I wanted to improve my case acceptance process. As part of that, it was, how do I improve my case presentation by offering payment plans? Like, this is huge. And I hope you are using this your sleep patients. Because this is like, and T-Bone talks about this all the time in his lectures. It's like, why aren't we putting these patients on monthly payment plans?
Yeah. I mean, sleep and ortho are no-brainers.
Yeah, no-brainers, man. Because they're coming back. They're a captive audience. They're not going to skip out on a payment. Why would you let Care Credit take a 10% chunk of that Invisalign case?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big chunk.
And it's a huge chunk. I mean, that's just throwing your overhead way off. So honestly, since we started doing monthly payment plans for our patients, our case acceptance went up 23%.
So what does that look like in the platform? Basically, you can go into like is it an online platform?
Yeah. It's a cloud-based platform. It's all encrypted.
I know it sounds, I'm sure I've looked at this twice, Zach, but like I just knew it was going to be good. I saw it save money, and then I have a great front office team, so they take care of this. But
that's all you need. That's the thing. And that's what we want. Like, it's beautiful because, so I just did like a series of webinars for Dentsply Sirona, and it's talking about like the service business industry. How do we train our patient base and our employees to drive down our overhead and increase our profitability? And it's you did exactly what you need to do. You need to put it in your front desk hands.
And I got out of the way.
Get out of the way. Let them automate the process because our payment plans, our monthly payment plans are automated. My team is using it for our loyalty plans. So for our annual membership plans, people are signing up like left and right because it's like, okay, well, I'll just pay this once a year fee and it just renews automatically. Yep. Gives me a discount on work. Yep. So, and it just, man, it's just really grown our collections. Like, so, I mean, I'm a big metrics guy. Right. So I told you our case acceptance went up 23% since we implemented this process in our office. Our collections rate, which was good. We were at a 97% collection rate before, like in 2016. We started this in 2017. Right now, as it stands, post COVID, we are 102% collections. How do you get above 100? It's because we have people doing prepayments. People that are still on payment plans from the last year. So we're still collecting money, even though our production went down.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, the
prepayment. During the COVID shutdown, we were averaging about $4,000 a day in collections because of our payment plans.
That's amazing.
Nobody in the office, nobody on my payroll, nobody was in there running payments or anything. It was just happening in the software. Boom, boom, boom.
What about... talk about the different ways people pay over the phone, online. Does that affect fees, not affect fees? How does that work?
No, totally does. Totally does. So there's differences in the interchange rate. So it doesn't affect what you pay if you're on an Interchange Plus program, it doesn't change what you pay the middleman.
Okay.
Because we're only charging that set percentage fee above the interchange rate. But the interchange rate goes up if the card is not present. Because it's a less secure transaction, right?
Gotcha.
You follow?
Yep.
And then if you're also on a tiered pricing structure, not only does the interchange rate goes up, but the middleman's cut goes up because it puts it into a higher tier. Because on a tiered pricing structure, their philosophy is if the card is more expensive, then we should be making more money off of it.
Gotcha. So in essence, if for a lot of people that are on tiered structure, they take over the phone payments or online payments, they could be paying even more.
They could probably they would probably see their effective rate go up about a full percentage month to month basis. And at the end of the day, that's what you need to look at is the effective rate. If I process $50,000, how much am I paying in fees?
Gotcha. Kind of the average over the whole thing.
Right. Right. Because then that minimizes the ups and downs of the over the phone payments, the debit card payments, the high rewards card payments, because then you'll even out those fluctuations. So if you're paying over 2.25%, you need to switch. That's the bottom line.
2.25%.
Yeah. That's just to even take a look. Now, if you want me to take a look,
that's a cumulative kind of like of both people's cut. 2.25%.
Correct. That's all in. That is all in. So let's just take a look at, let's see what, you want to take a look at my office? You want to take a look at your office?
Let's take a look at my office. Obviously, cherry picking information here. This is like why I started a podcast. You just interview people who are smarter than you and then get information that helps your office. It's great.
That's right. It's a win-win. Oh, and then you're going to walk in tomorrow morning and be like, tell me about our credit card.
No, I'm definitely going to ask about if we're using these payment plans, which I think we are. Because I think this is a big one. Because like we were the ones holding credit card numbers on sticky notes in the drawer, which I know is like, I mean, I'm joking about that, but kind of serious, but totally serious, but totally joking. You know, because we're super HIPAA compliant in our office. And so, yeah, I think that was a big thing. That was like, hey, we want to switch to this so where we can actually do this. So now we're using, like, we're putting it in contracts in our PMS software. So it's like showing up right in our AR. And I think we are using this, and we're doing, I know we're using the online payment option.
So hold on. I'm looking at, because we have both of your accounts kind of, tied together. So
I have sleep here. And Sleep Better, right. Tennessee and the dental practice.
So your fees for,
probably need to lower them down a little bit. You got a little number there. You just take it down a couple percentages. Come on.
Sure. I'm doing a quick calculation here. Hold on 1 second. And I'm going back to your March fees because April and May have just been a cluster, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Hey, but don't call it a comeback. because we are coming back strong.
Oh, so are we. So are we. We'll get crazy. We'll get to that. Okay, you want to know your fees for March?
I do.
1.77%.
All right. Under the 225 number, substantially.
I guarantee you, you would go take that to your Bank of America guy and he'd be like, get out of here with that. I can't beat that.
That's a half a percentage. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you're killing it. You're doing great. Now, okay, so let's look at that. So if we're going to plug those numbers into your old pricing structure. Hold on one second. You would have paid.
This is just for the month of March?
Just for the month of March. You would have paid $623 more.
Yeah, that's a lot in a month. $620.
I mean, that's at least a couple of nice bottles of scotch or bourbon, right?
It is. 620 times 12. That's $7,500 a year.
Yeah. That you would have just been throwing away.
Because people will be like, why do you care so much, work so much about like trying to get it? I mean, to me, that's straight cash out of my pocket. Yeah. Like, that's overhead money that is going nowhere but to me, except for the taxes that I have to pay the government part. But other than that, that's like my money. And so that to me, and to your point, what have I done differently? Nothing.
You've only improved your processes by adding the payment plans. I brought value to your practice and saved you money. You should be buying dinner next time, not sticking me with flipping credit card roulette.
Credit card roulette is the only way to go, always. Okay, so now what about what are some tips that you could encourage us offices to make sure they're doing as far as like taking these payments? Is there anything specific? You mentioned one, I guess, as far as like debit card, PIN number, that's ideal. Give me some other scenarios, whether it's over the phone or whatnot. What do we need to be doing?
Taking the card in person is always going to be your least expensive.
Okay.
Okay. Automated is going to be your next least expensive because it's encrypted on our platform. Okay.
So what you're saying, once we set up a payment plan, that's less expensive
than that card not present. So because when it recurs, the card's still technically not present, but because it's been encrypted and tokenized in our platform, it's less expensive than a card not present transaction, but it's still not as cheap as the card present transaction. So card present transaction is always going to be your cheapest transactional expense. Then how deep down the overhead rabbit hole do you want to get? Because if you automate it, you're actually saving manpower hours. So what's the cost savings there, you know, compared to that quarter of a percent difference?
It's negligible. You just do it. Yeah.
Right. So card present, debit card, if you can, with a PIN is the biggest thing. And then automated next. So over the phone's kind of like your most expensive because anybody could have that credit card, right?
So is it better for me to, if someone calls in, they want to make a payment, I've got the online area for them to make a payment online. Is it better for me just to say, hey, let me refer you over here to do it online?
Yeah, because the more data you put into that transaction, the lower your rate is going to be as well. So even if you take a payment over the phone, as long as if your front desk is also including their address and zip code,
okay,
that drives down the rate. And that's the nice thing about our platform too. Once you make a payment through the platform, that card is automatically stored for future transactions. It's stored as an encrypted token. So they don't have to re-put in that same data. They just have to put in the new transaction amount.
Well, that's
so it's less work.
Yeah.
So like, I don't want to make you feel better about yourself. The whole why behind the automated payment plan system is I had a front office manager who was making $37 an hour when we took over the practice.
Wow.
She would come over. She would come to the office on Fridays to run their monthly credit card charges.
Literally just to put in things like that. Wow.
She'd spend 4 hours every Friday with her Rolodex that she kept in her front desk of everybody's credit card numbers. Oh my gosh. I mean, how terrible is that process? I was like, ooh. We got to figure out something better.
Well, that was so funny when you said when you first said overhead. My initial thing was I guarantee you 20% of the 10. It's an extra 10% on team probably. That seems to be a thing.
Exactly. It's so happening. You automate it. You cut out those expenses.
Fantastic. All right. What am I missing? Anything else on that lines?
No. The one thing that we've been able to pivot into is contactless payments post COVID. So this is such a nice segue. I should do this for a living.
I was like, tell me more. I love it when you host my podcast.
So we came back first week of May. Got the PPP loan the end of April. Brought the team back. And we kind of talked about this. I think we had a little bit back and forth on one of the Facebook groups. But what we did on the first day back, we didn't see patients at all. Right? We brought the team in, made sure everything was clean, rooms were stocked, walked everybody through our PPE. Here's what we had for them. Sat down, brought in lunch. And then we kind of role played walking patients in and out of the office. Here's how our process is going to be. And then opened it up for questions, concerns, right? And our team, thankfully, was really on board with coming back. But our biggest hesitation was actually from our front desk. And we did not anticipate that at all. It was, they're like, well, how are you protecting us? Yeah, you're doing all this for the back office. You have disposable gowns, face shields. What are we wearing up front? Where are our plexiglass shields? And then the thing that they said is, they're like, how are we going to take payments on this Clover machine if we have to wipe it down after every patient? I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. And so what we did, Apex immediately pivoted into, okay, what contactless solutions do we have and how can we improve that? And so using that virtual terminal to authorize the transaction with a chip reader that is secured to the desktop, so that way the patient just takes their card, dips it in, pulls it out, doesn't touch any of the equipment. Front desk doesn't touch anything, so there's no cross-contamination. On top of that, the biggest thing has been sending out text-to-pay tokenizations. And so we have direct integration with a software called Modento, where you can actually send the text-to-pay for a customizable amount through their platform. It uploads directly to their platform, and if you're using Open Dental, integrates directly into Open Dental. So now I use Dentrix in my office, so my team still has to update the patient ledger, but that takes 2 seconds.
So with text to pay, like I know like a lot of more and more companies are doing that. Is that something that like are those specific to, like you said, you've got a relationship with Modento, like that's there are other ways to do text to pay throughout that, or like sure. You can't send those links through other softwares or
nope,
you
just we have can. To,
so how does that
Absolutely
work?
Absolutely we can. So because with our software that we have, we actually have what's called the hosted payment page, which is that website integration. With that includes a link that you copy and paste into any text messaging reminder system. So I use Yappy in my office. Love Yappy, love the product. And we'll go in and send those patients a unique text with a link to the payment portal. And it's encrypted and tokenized. It's completely secure. They make that payment, we update the ledger. So, and it works for any patient engagement software.
Yeah, that's something we probably need to do. I need to make sure we're using. We just switched over to RevenueWell and Jive and their phones and everything. So it's a big switch for us because we've been with Weave and Yappy for forever, really since the beginning. But I really wanted to kind of, that was one thing I wanted to do with during the coronavirus time was kind of consolidate everything. So that was a move we made, but I'm trying to kind of figure out now, okay, what we used to do, what can we do there and do differently and whatnot. That's been interesting.
Well, you know what you need to do? You just need to put me in contact with RevenueWell. So
no, I can do that.
Give me your guy.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. A lot of different services will offer their own integrated text to pay solution, but you have to set up a separate merchant services account. And it's always a higher rate because it's with Stripe. Stripe charges a flat 2.95% and 30 cents per transaction. So your interchange or your costs on those transactions are above 3%. And if you're trying to keep costs low, that doesn't make any sense. Whereas if you use,
I mean, that's insane, getting above 3%.
And the nice thing about Apex is we have all these payment modalities that all funnel into the same platform. So all of the ways that you are taking payments are funded the next day in the same funding cycle. So it's easier to reconcile your end of day payments and your monthly reports.
I'm gonna have to get you.
Because it's all your fingertips.
It looks like they're starting something, RevenueWell payments, pay as you use rate of 2.9% plus 0.3 cents per payment, inclusive of all debit and credit card payments.
That's $0.3. That's
$0.3.
It's 2.9 and 30 cents.
Yes, that's correct.
Yep.
Gotcha.
That's Stripe.
No contracts, a monthly setup, extra fees. Yeah, and a link for use anywhere that does not require logging in the patient portal immediately leads to new payment. So, gotcha. Yeah, no, that's interesting. I'll have to pass that along.
Yeah. So those are the changes we kind of made to the office. It's been a slow go. You know, we're at about 70, 75%, I'd say.
Let me ask you, I'm going to turn the table on you. You're back in the practice. You've made some adjustments. Obviously, you've done some things that like that, which is great for Apex and fantastic. But from a practice standpoint, you're at 70%, 75%. What do you think is holding you back from being full tilt?
Well, a couple things. We added 10 minutes to our hygiene appointments for the time being, for at least the next 6 month cycle. So that cut out a morning appointment and an afternoon appointment.
You lost two appointments.
And
how long are your hygiene visits?
60 minutes now.
So an hour long visit, new patients, an hour and a half?
Hour and 20, but it's a little bit of a stagger because we bring them in for a 20 minute doctor exam, meet and greet first.
And then, so 10 minutes on, so you're losing two patients a day.
Yeah.
Per hygienist.
Three hygienists.
I don't love that. Okay.
I don't love that either. It's temporary. I mean,
what do you think you're, and like, I'm going to be devil's advocate here, right? Because that's, what are you gaining in that 10 minutes? Is it optics?
I'm keeping my hygienist.
So it's optics on some level.
It's optics. It's very much optics, you know, but I think it's optics on some level, but at the same time, it's team care, right?
I'm all for that. I mean, I'm all for that. I'm just saying, I also want it to be like legitimately, because you're a numbers guy, right? So if we're going to break it down, we're saying, okay, two patients a day per, how many hygienists do you have?
Three.
Six patients a day times y'all are 4 days a week?
Yeah.
That's 24 patients a week. You're doing it for the next 6 months. 24. Sully,
don't run those numbers.
I mean, this is easy math for me. And you're like, well, not to be rude to your hygienist, like, get a new hygienist. At some point, it's like 24 times six, not only the production there, but then the production you're missing from not being able to diagnose dentistry on those people. I mean, you know how the song and dance goes. I'm all for making protocols and doing things in place. And I've been kind of, I'm giving Tima a little bit of shit about this because they've kind of done a similar thing where they're really drawing out the appointment. At some point, though, I'm guessing. Yes, it's been a little tricky. We're having patients wait in the car. That's adding a little bit of time, whatnot. But it's not like, were we not wiping down good enough for AIDS, Hep C, Hep B, and everything else that was in our? We were. You know, like, our protocols have been good. Like, yeah, we want to protect ourselves. I'm not sure. I'm loving the whole adding. That's just a lot of appointments to me.
You're preaching to the choir. Like, I am a firm believer that our protocols and our standards that were in place before all of this were adequate.
I'm not downplaying it by any means.
No, neither am I. But I have there been any outbreaks originating in a dental office?
Not that we know of.
No, not that we know of.
This is what cracks me up. All we hear is dentists at risk, hygienists at risk. Like, the dental office is an at-risk place. I get it. We've always been at risk, but it's not like dentists and team members are like flooding the hospitals. It's not like we're seeing just every first frontline defender of the hospital seeing these patients is just racking up. We don't see an unproportional amount of dental people compared to the rest. It just doesn't make sense.
So for me, with our hygiene appointments, it will get back to normal sooner rather than later, because even looking at it, all of our hygienists are on.
How long have you been back, by the way?
We've been back since May 6th.
Okay. So basically the exact same time. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
So, but all of our hygienists are on commission. So we pay them a base salary.
Okay. So they're going to want to come back eventually, get back to that.
Yeah. They're going to want to get back. And our hygienists are very they're sharp. They're numbers driven too. And they're looking at it like, exactly like you just did. I'm losing how many appointments a week? Yeah. Oh, no. But it's that struggle is making them strive to become more efficient and to make sure they're running on times. Because when they first started, they're like, we really want that extra time. And then after about 2 weeks, they're like, I don't know if we need all this much time. Right. And now they're like, okay, when are we going to get back to normal? Gotcha. So I want to get through one cycle of hygiene appointments. Just for the patient perspective.
Yeah,
as well.
I get it. I'll give it to you.
But we'll get back to normal.
What else do you think you're, because that's not accounting for 25%.
No, so the other thing is we're down on an assistant. We cannot find an assistant. especially like, and we started looking, we had, we,
do you have dry shield?
Solid, what's that?
Do you have dry shield? Yes. All right, good.
Yeah. But we're also, so we're a fee for service office and I don't use an expanded functions assistant.
Bougie. Fee for service.
But that's the practice we bought.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you married into it.
Yeah. Our patients expect a lot of the doctor's time. There's no way.
See, that's probably number one reason I wouldn't survive in a fee for service office.
But dude, I love it. Like, I love hearing myself talk. I love cutting it up with the patients. You know?
I can see that.
What are you saying?
I'm just saying.
But here's the thing. Like, and this is just my personal philosophy and my partner's philosophy too. And this is why we work so well together. Like, we believe that the product walking out of the door has our name on it, right? I could prep the most gorgeous class 2 prep, clean all the decay out, perfect, pristine. But if I let an expanded functions assistant go in there that may or may not have her bonding protocol down, or may not carve the right anatomy, polish it up, all the patient is going to remember is that shitty restoration.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm a control freak.
It's very true.
And so I want to do it myself. And on top of that, because we are fee for service, we're bringing a lot more value to the patient in the form of inlays.
Yeah, no, I think you have inlays. To. Yeah, you can do a lot of that stuff. So, I wish I would do.
And it just takes more time, but it's a good pace. Honestly, like, I would love if we could all get back to a fee for service mentality in dentistry and stop trying to like break our backs to like hit these quotas and hit these numbers, because it inevitably, like, what do they always say in dental school? You can have it fast, you can have it cheap, or you can have it done well. Pick two. You can't have the best of all worlds. And so in our practice, we have chosen efficiency and done well. It's not inexpensive, but you're getting the doctor's time. And that's what we always thought. Our patients are always like, wow, you know, that was quick. Wow, I love my crown. I love this. They don't even balk at the price, you know? But that's why, like, I had a patient today come in. She's like, you know, my daughter, her dentist is charging a PPE fee. Are you guys going to charge that? I said, absolutely not. Why would I do that to you? That's just nickel and diming you. But what I am going to do next year, I'm probably going to raise my crown fee.
I'm probably going to raise my fees and you won't even know. No, yeah, that's silly to me. I mean, that's jumping over dollars to save pennies for sure on some level of that. I hope none of our listeners do that. I'd be shocked if they did.
Don't do that. Very, that's the worst business practice.
No, but I think that's good. I think we'll get to fee for service one day on some level. I like my, you know, part of it is I'll say this. I think that, what I do think I'm proud of is that I get that everyone is replaceable, including the dentist. And you can train really good quality people to do, I would argue, better work in some instances. Like take numbing, for example. Our hygienists numb. I would argue that our hygienists do a better job numbing than I do. Not because it's the same profoundness of anesthetic, like they just, but because they're willing to take the time to do it in a way that probably is less, you know, less painful to the patient, because I'm thinking about the 6 other places I need to be or where I'm going, et cetera. So I may not be, take every.
You've got sausage fingers. So, and, like, and, you see, yeah, those hands coming out of face.
And I mean, like that. And they got little petite, you know, I mean, they're just built for that. So, you know, there's that, you know, or like, but then Celeste does a great job doing fillings. I mean, it's not something, you know, I'm pretty transparent, honest. Like, I don't enjoy it. It's not fun for me. And so, like, you know, for her, that's the highlight of her day. Right.
Right.
So, like, the same effort I look at in placing an implant, you know, she looks at that and takes that kind of pride in the filling. So, and so I think, and by repetition, you know, and the beauty of dentistry is, like, obviously you have to have some level of hand skills, but a lot of it's just practice, you know, and then learning the right techniques and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's worked well for us.
So what's your favorite thing to do in dentistry? Implants?
Surgery, man. Surgery. The body heals. That's what I love about surgery. The body heals. And so, you know, you could do the best filling ever. And then, you know, and then for some reason there was this little spot that didn't get bond right or got, you know, contaminated, now they're sensitive, you know, occlusion's challenging, you know, you take out a tooth, you know, the body heals. You put in an implant, it integrates. Like, so that's what I enjoy to do. They're even more like, I mean, ultimately I love sedating patients and doing a lot on a patient in a little amount of time. That's what I really like to do, which is be productive essentially. But I think surgery is where I find that I have the most success, which ultimately probably is part of the reason why I enjoy it, right? Because that's tends to be what I'm good at.
Yep. I love everything because I'm good at everything.
Well, that I don't buy for 1 second because I played golf with you. So
yeah, my short game is shit.
That's all right. I played a good bit during coronavirus. It was good.
Man, I've played 2 times this year. Man, 2 times. Man, I know it's terrible.
I played this weekend. It was pretty fun.
I played on Friday. Almost had a hole in one.
Wow.
And then played the.
Have
back
you ever
nine,
had a hole in one?
Never.
Me neither.
I played the back nine 6 over, and I triple bogeyed 2 holes.
That's my game. Typically, my game is like I'm killing it, and then I just blow up on a couple holes.
We have a very similar game. Didn't you hole one from like 185 yards out?
First hole of the day. Yeah,
that was amazing.
And that's why I kind of like my game because, you know, like every hole there's a chance.
Most time won't happen. So you're saying there's a chance.
Well, dude, Zach, this has been a blast. I really do think this is great for our listeners. You know, not to just plug your company, but it has been a really good solution for us. And I will say that I do think that it's a no-brainer for if you are, you know, to at least look at your merchant services fees and see where you're at, see what kind of options you have. You know, not only just the fee part of it, but just kind of what flexibility you have in payment plans, online payments, that sort of thing. And you know, if people want to reach out to you, Zach, what's the best way to get in touch with them? You're going to hook them up, take care of them, I'm sure.
Yeah. The best way is to go to the website, www.apexpaymentsolutions.com. Just kind of, take a test drive around, see what the options are, fill out an inquiry form, make sure you put in Millennial Dentist as the referral source.
Obviously.
That way we can, you know, I can pat him on the back and maybe buy him a steak dinner or something like that. But no, honestly, like all your listeners, like we'll give them the best rate possibly can, $50 off of a terminal. So as long as they put
that's
you down.
A good deal.
Yeah. I mean, and we provide all of our equipment's at cost. So I'm literally taking a $50 bath on each of the terminals. So
but we didn't even talk about that. What terminals are y'all using? What does that look like? Are they, I mean, I'm kind of asking this question to help a little bit plug because one of the things I like about them is they're mobile. You know, terminals basically.
So, yeah, you've got the Clover Flex, which is the top of the line.
Love that thing.
I have it in my office. I love it too because my treatment plan coordinator takes it back to the room.
Yep.
Hygienist assistants can take it back into the room, take payments, and it's the absolute lowest rate because it's a card present transaction. You can keep the office completely paperless because you can text or email receipts. It's a great terminal. The only downside to that terminal, there's a $10 a month monthly fee. That they just increased from $5 a month for their back-end encryption. So that kind of stinks. The best terminal that I like right now for like your lowest cost, no monthly fees is the desktop 3500 because it has a pin pad so you can take those debit card payments. But like if we're talking like what do you want? What's the best aesthetic for your office? What gives the most seamless integration? It's the Clover Flex.
Clover Flex.
By far and away. Clover Flex.
I feel like that's like a NASCAR car. Clover Flex 5000.
Woo! If you ain't first, you're last.
All right. Well, Zach, I appreciate it. It's been fun. I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. Remember to shoot us emails, texts, Instagram messages, what you want to hear, what you want to talk about, and please review us. That's one thing I keep forgetting to always say is if you like the show, go on iTunes or wherever else you found it. You know, leave us a good review. We appreciate that. But remember, work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.